Okay, Stephen Foote, welcome to the Jacobs Podcast.
Hey, Sean, thank you. Thank you for having me.
No worries. Look, we're going to talk about risk and public safety, why these things are important and how people might be able to get better or improve at these things. But I just want to talk about you first, Steve. I know you've been a detective. We've worked together previously. You've been in a band, and I can't recall the name of the band. You might even still play in it. I'm not sure. You were also a photographer, you reminded me just before the interview, and I know I've known you for a few years now as someone who just relishes ideas. First, tell us a bit about your career, Steve.
Okay, Sean. Look, I grew up in the central west in New South Wales, and my folks moved to the city when I was 12. I went to Penrith High School, and I really enjoyed that part of my life, going to high school. I involved myself in absolutely everything I could. I was in the choir, in the band, in the footy team. And then I went from there to the National Art School. And this is the part that you might not know about me. That's when I joined the band. I was a performance artist. I was in the Captain Nerf and Utzon Band.
Okay, that's right.
Which is a really odd title for a really odd group of people, including my my art teacher from high school, who was my mentor, who was a pretty famous Australian artist by the name of Richard Larder, and he was Captain Nerf, and I moved on from there, and. That's when I became a photographer, working in public relations for the Department of Main Roads in New South Wales. And amongst the really interesting things I did in that time was I had the keys to the Harbour Bridge, would you believe?
Oh, wow.
And lots of people have to pay for that privilege now, and they don't get to walk around like I did. They have to get tethered to the safety line. But I went up there on a regular basis and took photographs of the workmen, the riggers, and the cityscape, because it changed quite often. From there, I moved on. I became a policeman in 1980 because I was growing a family, and when I worked in the DMR, it didn't allow me to advance. And to get incremental or increments in terms of my salary. So I was the third in line in the photography department, and that's where I was going to stay. So I made a decision to go into the police, and I enjoyed that too. And I did as many different things as I could early in my service. I was a police diver, but for most of my service, I was a detective. And I worked in some really interesting areas like organized crime squad and licensed gaming. And that part of me, it was one of the parts that really impacted on me personally and psychologically. I guess it's one of the things that, one of the ingredients into what I'm doing now. And then I left the police in 92 and went into the gaming area, into licensed gaming, casino gaming, where I was a compliance specialist. And I got to see the world and got to travel and got to build a knowledge base about different cultures and different places. And I managed a club after that for a while in the city, in Sydney. And then I think I was working in Macau when the global financial crisis came along, and it made my job redundant as a compliance person. Came back to Australia, and then I worked. I couldn't really find, long-term employment in any one place, and I had a succession of roles which also greatly impacted on me personally and made a difference in the way I think. And one of those roles was being an investigator or a loss adjuster in after the earthquake in Queensland, in Christchurch, 2009, I think that was. And the other major and really challenging role, where I learnt the most about myself was in Nauru, when I worked for Wilson Security as the operations manager. And later I became the risk manager for both islands, for Nauru and Manus, and also the WHS manager and the community liaison manager, which you know about.
Sure.
And the thing that rounds out my career is another role where we met up was working for Goldoc as a trainer for security for the Commonwealth Games in on the Gold Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And that was certainly challenging. And I got to work in the Games Operations Centre during the Games.
Sure. Actually, that's a good prompt because I was just going to say that we've worked together once, and I think I might have mentioned that at the start of the interview, but it's, yeah, actually twice I forgot about Comm Games, even though it was the most recent project we've done together.
I'm thinking we have to find a third thing to work on, so I sure. don't know why, but just round it out to that that tree.
Yes, that's right. Well, look, the Safer Institute might be something else, but I know, you know, from managing a club, the keys to the Harbour Bridge, the band, I forget the name already, but it was a very lively name.
Don't forget it, John. It's the Captain Irv and Utzon Utzon Band.
Okay, Captain Irv and Utzon Utzon Band. Okay, there we go. And police diver, and as you mentioned, the two roles we've worked on together previously. There's something interesting you said at the start there, Steve, about being in school and your involvement in everything. That's something that I've followed suit, and I think it really sets the tone. You know, I really encourage a lot of young people when I can to get involved in as many things as you possibly can, even though you might not enjoy them or they might not be where your skills are at. It certainly does set the tone for, I think, a pretty interesting life and just being able to be mobile and, I think, transfer across some of the careers you've been involved in and the different lines of work.
Yeah, look, I think that's good advice, Sean. And I used to be fond of saying that, I used to suck the marrow out of life. I'm not sure what movie or what book that comes from, but that's pretty much what I sought to do and pretty much done.
So, Steve, you recently started the International Safer Institute, and a part of that is SAFER, S-A-F-E-R. And so your idea for SAFER grew out of your risk and security management work, as you mentioned. Can you just talk a bit about your accumulated observations and your thoughts for starting SAFER specifically? A lot of people talk about a gap, and where did you see the gap out there in terms of for starting SAFER?
Okay, Sean, SAFER was started by me, and it came out of an acronym. SAFER is actually an acronym, so it means situational awareness for every risk. And I started that with an old school friend, Max Cowan, from my days in at Penrith High School. He actually didn't go to the school. He went to Nepean, but we were still mates. And he and I started SAFER, and that was a blog. And what we tried to do was... which actually led to the Safer Institute. But what we tried to do with the first blog was just to put out there things that I didn't see that were getting filtered down from governments. And governments have a duty of care to their citizens to do their best to try and give us an awareness or give us the message that we need or the public safety messages that we need to keep ourselves and our families safer. And the governments typically filter the information down through their emergency service agencies, through national security and intel communities. And I didn't think that messages were hitting home with lots of people, and And whether you've got a top-down approach or a bottoms-up, like we're promoting with the Safer Institute, one of the big obstacles is complacency within our communities and within our society. And so I created the Safer Institute, hoping to roll out a course called Mindfulness for Urban Living, which would help to come in from the bottoms up to try and bridge those gaps, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Look, I just take your point quickly about the top-down approach of government there. I know that we both attended a talk recently by Gav Schneider, and I wrote a review of his book, Can I See Your Hands? But a lot of people are talking now about that, exactly what you've mentioned. Not a lot of people, but, people in the sort of circles that we're in, about changing the emphasis back onto people for ownership and personal responsibility. It's not being proactive and, actually doing national security work, but actually just, yes, like you say, an awareness of their circumstances, yep, and awareness of risk, and not constantly looking to government. And, I can recall, probably 8 years ago, even maybe even 10 or so, but maybe even more recent than that, but about the counter radicalization strategies that the sort of, that would imply a sort of certain degree of social engineering. A lot of government efforts really focused on that, and then most recently, though, it's, if you read the latest guidelines from the Australian government, it flips it over to put it back on people to be a lot more vigilant, a lot more aware. And, I certainly use those principles with the Commonwealth Games security planning about placing emphasis on individuals to be more aware of their own public safety. But, yeah, you can certainly see, well, like, I've noticed that trend a lot, and it's been a slow burn over the last decade, but a lot more people are talking about ownership of your own awareness versus looking to the government to pursue counter-radicalisation, or looking at the kinetic effects of public safety, because law enforcement can't be everywhere all the time.
Yeah, and mate, it's not only about law enforcement. You look at the risks that we face, the daily and I guess seasonal risks in Australia. Mm-hmm. Australia is a land of floods and droughts and bushfires, and if you look at the global risk report that the World Economic Forum put out last November, yep, the top risk by likelihood is extreme weather, and number three is natural disasters. And our communities, depending on where they're situated in Australia, face the risk of bushfires and floods on a seasonal basis. And they're the sort of risks I'm talking about. And there's some more topical ones like road rage. I mean, you hear about that every other day on the news.
Mm. Yeah, and you certainly see no shortage of YouTube videos. I think Australian drivers are getting a global reputation for aggressive driving and road rage. But sorry, just quickly, a lateral move on the list of risks there, Steve. One thing I heard the other day, and forgive me for going aside here, but more people apparently die each year globally from solar power than they do from nuclear power, which is an interesting one. Anyway, sorry for that lateral move, but I just thought I'd mention it. But there's no shortage of things like that when you properly put a risk framework on things that they'll actually surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, and depending on which part of that spectrum you're looking at in terms of statistics about death and injury, the Safer Institute recently did we've been doing a piece on emotional resilience, and I said earlier in a talk in describing my career when I was in the police, early on when I was in uniform, I attended the deaths of three young men in separate self-harm incidents in one afternoon shift.
Wow.
And you look at, you know, one of the pieces in the emotional resilience part that we did was about suicide and suicide prevention. And I looked up the statistics for the death of young men between 25 in between 1960 and 1990, which is, and I was smack dab in the middle of that working as a cop.
Mm.
The number of deaths from self-harm in the group 15 to 25-year-old males tripled in those 30 years. And now we've got a situation where young people in that same group, young, particularly males, more of them die at their own hand than in road accidents.
Mm.
Mm. And look, any which way we look, we've got to do something about the spiraling or the increase in these sorts of statistics. And just on suicide, so, you know, we're fast approaching 1 million people in the world that are going to die in a year by self-harm. And a lot of this can be avoided.
Yeah. Look, very interesting. So, I think it's been acute problem.
When you try to link my career to some of these things, I'm doing it with SAFER and the SAFER Institute. There's been personal impacts, and I mentioned them, and so while we're not the subject matter experts in each area of the tip sheets that we put up on the Institute site, and we do acknowledge each of the people that are the subject matter experts, I think it's great, you know, it's good to have a portal where the folks out there can just go to one site and grab that information. For example, our latest tip sheet is on, is for parents, what to tell your children when they go to their first music festival. Mm. And they're going to be at risk going to their first music festival, and we know why, and we know some of the reasons why, but, it's messages like that other people that are giving out there, that are sometimes difficult to find, but we want to use the SAFER Institute as a vehicle where, like a one-stop shop for trying to figure out how you can be more aware.
Sure. And I like that component to it about the emotional resilience part. It's not just, you know, kinetic law enforcement. There's a lot of instances where this applies. And, look, that's a really interesting stat, Steve. I didn't realise that over that 30-year period, you know, especially that 15 to 25 age period where, trebled. Wow, that's,
Look, if I can just go on about the, you know, we've got the emotional resilience pathway, but we're shortly going to launch into another pathway, which is cyber resilience. And I go back to the global risk report from last year. And coming in at number 5 and number 6 by way of likelihood is data theft or fraud and cyber attacks. And when we last caught up, I spoke about the Internet of Things. Is it become a basic human need? And I'm still pondering on that one, mate. But I think there's a lot of risk and it's a big threat and you know, we're all connected now, and because we're all connected, we have to put in place control measures so we're not exposed and we're not harmed.
Sure. I think that resilience, you know, the cyber resilience, the emotional resilience, there's still areas that have a lot of residue where people are looking still to other explanations for them rather than looking at oneself. I know, you know, with you're looking at emotions or depression or things like that, that it can be, oh, well, look, it's a medical issue, therefore we need to look to the medical profession to be resilient, or how can we be more resilient, rather than looking to ourselves and what tips or strategies we might be able to adopt that can curb some of the ups and downs that young people might face, especially in that 15 to 25 bracket. But then also in the cyberspace, it's kind of, you know, that's, there's a lot of maturing that needs to take place there, but you can sort of feel that a lot of people are just still like, well, look, it's not really my issue to sort out, that, you know, someone should come up with a fix. Oh, well, look, that someone is government, to try and make people more resilient. But there's definitely ways that we can look better at ourselves to try and to sort these problems out.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Sean. And whilst you didn't say it, we are a selfish, selfish society. We're only interested in the things that we're interested in, and we blame someone else while, you know, when things happen.
Mm. Yeah. Yep. The now to another acronym you mentioned, SAFER, Situational Awareness for Every Risk. There's also one that I've heard you talk about before, Steve. It's IDEALS. Can you just talk us a bit through that one and the importance of having a bit of a framework around IDEALS? What does it actually stand for? Sorry.
So IDEALS is interrogate your environment and I guess be aware of any sudden and unexpected event. And if you identify that you're in the middle of something, and then you've got to defend yourself. And it's important that you stay safe so that you can help yourself and help others to achieve good outcomes. And the E is for engage with others. If there's other people around, you might need to, depending on your personality, you'll either be the leader or you'll be the follower. And you have to figure that piece out before you take action or they take action. And then the L is for the lessons learned. And, you know, a lot of awareness comes from memory. And the people that are most aware have memories of incidents or events where there were certain outcomes, and whether they were good or bad, they learned, they stored that information for the next time they got caught in a similar situation. And that's a good thing, you know, building that memory. And the S is for stress testing. If you work as part of a regular group that's in your work life, and you work with the same people, particularly if you're an emergency responder, then it's good to understand that group dynamic and who's got to do what so that the group remains safe. Does that make sense, mate?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you prompted something I was talking about with my girlfriend on the way home. I picked her up from the city last night where she works, and then we were driving home and we just recorded an incident that I was a part of. We both were sort of, it was about 6 months ago or so. It was we went for a walk, crossing six lanes of traffic, and we ran the gauntlet to run across the road, and it wasn't dangerous. It was a calculated risk, you might say. But then my phone fell out of my pocket and fell onto the road, and it was too late to go back, but my impulsive instinct was to actually run back and grab it. But then I knew just from my lateral vision there was a 18-wheeler probably going about 60, 70 k's an hour down the road that was probably not a good idea to jump in front of to grab my Sony smartphone. But it's just interesting when you mentioned it then, going through the IDEALS, the acronym, you know, that I went through every step there, but it was in the space of about, 4 seconds or so. And I think it's just interesting how your impulsive instinct can kick in, and mine was to grab the phone, but then it's just that awareness, like you interrogate your environment, you think, take that step to defend, you engage, you take action, and then, you know, lessons learned and stress testing from it is that, I think the important thing is, and you know, when you go through SAFER and IDEALS is, and talk a lot to people who are involved in a lot of high risk situations and scenarios, it's, now I know if that ever happens again, or if I encounter a similar circumstance, that I'll be much better at, you know, encountering it, because I've gone through it, yes, but I had thought about it previously, not for long, but, you know, I did think about, you know, in times past about what would happen if I dropped something on the road, and I didn't give it much thought, but it's kind of interesting because I'd gone through that myself in my own mind previously, that I kind of knew instinctively what to do. And there's been a couple of other instances where that's been the case, especially working in security, but yeah, it's interesting when you mentioned it then, it just prompted me of a conversation I had last night.
Yeah, mate, look, we've formalised that approach, but it's not, I've just put into words what we do, in, like you said, instinctively. And is there a need to do that? Is there a need to formalise it? Maybe not, but, you know, different people learn different ways. And if we put it out there as a formula, then and someone gets a hold of it and that helps them, that's a good thing, right?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, there's any number of, and the other thing I want to mention about IDEALS is this is a great example of that bottoms-up approach to public safety as well, where, you know, you'll see any number of incident management plans and emergency management plans that are all, that are adopted by business and governments to help people, particularly at work. But that sort of stuff is top down, and people think about it when they're at work, and maybe not so much at home. But when they're at home, they have instinctive means of protecting themselves. And IDEALS is just supports that. And this is part of this whole paradigm that worries me is we have our instincts emergency when we people are having this talk and having this debate about you know terrorist events and whatever we talk about flight or fight. And it worries me with the amount of destruction, the amount of distractions that, particularly that this latest generation, Generation Z, have. Is that being watered down, or is that not as a, is it becoming less effective than it was as we fought our way out of the jungle all of those millennia ago?
Sure. Look, I think, it's an interesting question, that point about distraction, but I think as well, it's, you know, there's a lot to be distracted by, but as well, I'm a big believer in this saying, if you don't know better, you can't do better. And, you know, you talked about your involvement in everything when you were a youngster, a lot of industries, a lot of sectors you've been involved in over your career. And I think although Generation Y and Z is probably known for crossing a few different sectors or different careers throughout their entire career and being exposed to different things and experiences, I wonder really how true that actually is about, you know, proper experiences, not just changing what you do on your CV, but I think a lot of this, like I mentioned, is actually, you know, when it comes to the lessons and stress testing part of IDEALS, is actually knowing better or knowing or being aware of what is actually out there and some of the threats and the risks. Like if you live a really insular life where you're online all the time looking at, you know, you're narrow casting, you're not getting out there and actually discovering different things or being inquisitive, then you don't know any better. So therefore you can't really have that exposure to think about these things or to be, you know, to gear yourself to be a bit more resilient about them. And, you know, I think that's just an everyday example. I mean, not just, you know, like you mentioned, it's not just for first responders, but I think that's just an interesting
thought there. I couldn't agree more, mate. And I think I've just come up with a formula listening to that last observation, that awareness equals involvement. You know, and another part, you know, I've told my children, and I tell anyone that cares to listen, one of the best educations you can have is travel.
Yeah.
And I know you know that, Sean, but, you know, that helps to, fill in some of those gaps in your knowledge base, particularly about awareness, because you're, you know, traveling to other countries, you're learning about how people see things through a different culture. You know, it's cultural awareness as well as understanding the risks of global travel now.
Mm. Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I think we've had a lot of headlines recently where the past few years we're not appreciating or, I guess, understanding the cultural or certainly the legal landscape in other countries has put young Australians or Australians into a bit of hot water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're the second most multicultural country in the world. Did you know?
Oh, okay. No, I knew we were probably up there, but who beats us?
Luxembourg.
Oh, okay.
but that's if you believe Google, mate. We share second place with Switzerland.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's good, a fertile sort of training ground for knowing better and, you know, that awareness and involvement. And I think when you travel, yeah. Steve, you really have to, you know, travel properly, you know, look at things with a, I guess it doesn't mean a tolerance or acceptance of everything you see. And, you know, I've been really fortunate to, like you say, travel a lot and grow up in some interesting places like in the Middle East and the Pacific and parts of Australia. But it's sort of an appreciation of that's how things are done and, you know, the cultural landscape, as you mentioned, and some of the dynamics that are driving the way people see the world. And it doesn't mean losing your own principles, but it's just, I think it's a really healthy thing that can expand your awareness and do it in a way that certainly helps your public safety.
Yeah. So, mate, one of the things that's going to happen in that space, and it's already happening, is giving people memory of events through virtual reality.
Mm.
And I know Victorian Ambulance Service have just been through an education program, situational awareness for AMBO drivers and for paramedics, because you know they've been getting beat up on. And it's a real concern, not just in Victoria. But they've just done scenario training through virtual reality, through virtual reality goggles, and they've all had the same scenario. So they've all, and you know, a typical scenario would be going to help somebody for a medical emergency, and there's a group of people around that person, and AMBOs in the past have just been going towards their focus has been caring for that person and helping that person to in that emergency, but they haven't been so aware of people coming out of the crowd at them, but they're now more aware of that, and the statistics are already showing that there's a drop in the number of assaults on AMBOs simply because of their awareness.
Yeah. Well, interesting.
And what I'd like to do with mindfulness for urban living, that our starter course, is to get the funding for buying that equipment so that we can do those sorts of scenarios, like, for example, road rage scenarios, to help people get a memory and learn some lessons, although virtual lessons, about what responses they might make in those situations.
Mm.
And if I might put a plug out there to your people in, to your friends in your podcast world, mate, if anyone would like to join the Safer Institute that has some experience in applying for grants, I'd love to hear from them.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good point. And I know, actually, while we're on it, what's the actual website, Steve? Where can people find Safer? There's the tip sheets, the portal. Where can people get online and have a look at what work Safer's up to?
So it's all the W's. Safer Institute, one word, .org.au.
Okay, saferinstitute.org.au. Excellent.
Yep.
Now
we've just transitioned from Safer for you.info, and we're still bringing across some of the stuff that we had, particularly our recent posts. But all the tip sheets are on the new site, and the ideals is also there. And look, if there's one thing that I'd love for people to look at, is ideals. And, you know, if we can get one person out there to take notice and that needs to learn their lessons that way by looking at a formula, then we've done our job.
Yeah, look, I think it's a good point and really good. In rounding out, Steve, I wanted to just ask you, following on from what we've talked about and all the topics we've covered, are you optimistic about the future, sort of the next 5-10 years? I know this is an effort to try and turn a few things around, but what are your sort of thoughts about the future and the trends that are sort of going to unfold? And do you think that we can increase awareness and that we can curb this sort of tide of resilience that seems to have gone the other way, especially over the last few decades?
It really does depend on a change of thinking, mate, to really have any meaningful results in terms of people's awareness. I worry particularly about Y and Z generations because they're going to, you know, they've got help. You know, there's us baby boomers that have had those experiences that can help the younger folk. And there's got to be a shift in the way that we think, and I think the bottoms-up approach is a good one, and let's continue the top-down approach, but let's try and meet in the middle. And the thing about Y and Z is they're going to face threats that we can't even imagine at this point. So it really comes down to spreading the, you know, getting people familiar with what they would do in a situation, a sudden and unexpected situation. How would they react? And I just hope that there's other organisations out there like Safer Institute that, and I know there are, that, you know, Australian Red Cross is one of them. They have I'd like to give them a plug. Because their new app, Get Prepared, which is an emergency management plan for individuals. You can put it on your phone. I have it on my phone. We talk about that in Mindfulness for Urban Living. It's a great management plan. And, I congratulate the Australian Red Cross on getting that out there with the help of, AIG.
Yeah, great. So great initiative.
If everyone does their bit, whether it's from the top, from the bottom, from the middle, I'm optimistic, but it really comes down to trying to change the mindset of the people out there and getting them to think that it's not going to happen to them. It could. And, they've got plan for the, you know, you hope for the best but plan for the worst.
Well, that's a great point to finish on, and the website's www.saferinstitute.org.au. Stephen Foote, thank you very much for joining us on the Jacobs podcast.
Thank you, Sean. I've enjoyed having this conversation, as I enjoy having all of our conversations, and good luck with the podcast, mate. I've listened to more than half of them now, and I get something out of each one of them. Thank you.